Okay, so episode 4 now, and we are playing the Blackout game. And right off the bat, Dom, this may be actually be the worst game in Genius history, although we'll get there shortly, because this really just comes down to, like, collusion, right?
Yeah, in terms of just as a game to watch, I think it was still quite interesting and not actually that bad at all. But yeah, thinking about what the Genius is meant to embody and, like, the type of things that it wants to encourage in its games, this is so unique and not in a good way, because it just stands out so distinctly from everything else that they've done so far.
Right, yeah. And the way that this game works is we're going to split into two teams, and those teams are going to take turns in these various rounds, crossing or not crossing, and the other team is going to play defense by either guessing that they did or didn't cross. And I guess let's just get right into this, and I think it is actually very cool. One of the only redeeming parts of this game is that we are going to play in teams that are going to be drafted, and the captains for these teams were decided by, like, exit poll taken at the end of the previous game that we just talked about, the King game, where as the players were all leaving that week, they were polled on who they thought the biggest front runners were to win the whole season. And the top two vote getters are going to be the captains for these teams. And those people turn out to be Jinho, who I don't think is that big of a surprise. He's won the game once before, and he's off to a great start. He's won the first three main matches. And then also Lawyer Yoon-sun, I thought, was an interesting pick.
Yeah, I think with Yoon-sun, maybe there's a bit of Kyung-ran syndrome going around, where the fact that someone in her position is willing to just, like, play the game proactively and make her voice known is seen as kind of a threat, almost. And so you have these other people like, you know, Sangmin, Hongchul, who might stand out as the people really driving the action. They don't get named here, whereas Yoon-sun, who has been doing her thing but not really been very successful at it, is the one who really gets the focus here.
Yeah, I think it is. I think you hit on something really interesting there. And we should probably save that conversation for once we've gone through all three seasons and can talk about it in a spoiler-friendly environment. But I do think the Kyung-ran comparison is a really good one, where Kyung-ran stood out in season one and Yoon-sun, I believe, stands out in season two as different from the other female types that they cast.
Yeah, and I know partway through season two, Sangmin actually did an interview where he spoke about the people that he was most scared of at various stages of the game, and the people that he identified were Yoo-young and Jung-hyun, if my memory serves me right. And it's obviously very interesting that Jung-hyun is on that list, first of all. I think that's maybe a kind of mutual respect that was, you know, comes out of his run later. But I think with them and with something else that we're going to talk about later, where Yeon-kyul's actions this episode come about purely because he's so scared of this broadcaster thing, which we haven't really heard about until that point. This is maybe the one point where I think the Genius fails in terms of its storytelling, where I feel like you have to kind of show this stuff and not tell it. You can't just say, oh, well, Yoon-kyul is scared of the broadcasters, and then make no effort to tell us why the broadcasters are together, who the broadcasters are. You know, it's, I feel like that requires a bit more explanation.
Yeah, well, this is something, because you mentioned this is the first we really see of it, but this was, in the history of the Genius, to my knowledge, there have only been two real controversies, and both of them came from this season. And the primary one is what you're talking about, this Broadcasters Alliance. And maybe it's different because they're obviously presenting this for Korean culture, where people know who these people are, whereas we obviously just have zero frame of reference. We don't know who broadcasts. We don't know who really does what, because we've just met these people when we're marathoning very, very recently. But that is one of the big controversies that I'm sure we're going to be talking a whole lot about. And this is really the first time that we get to see it. But yeah, I guess we'll get there when we get there. Sorry for almost jumping the gun on that. But it is certainly worth noting that this is where it really starts to play a role.
Yeah, and going back to the third episode, we said you maybe see the beginnings of that, where one team ends up being Hongchul, Sangmin, Jiwon, and Jung-hyun ends up being lumped in there as well. And those are four of the people that end up being included under that umbrella.
Right, right. And the other one is Yoo-young down the line, where what eventually, you know, the way the season plays out is we coincidentally come down to all these broadcasters. And apparently that did not sit well with the Korean viewing audience, the fact that these broadcasters apparently kind of teamed up to pick off the less famous people. Yeah. So let's get into these draft teams. I don't even remember who had the first pick, but Jinho picked Doohee with his first pick, and Yoon-sun picked Sangmin with her first pick, which for me, if you've ever seen Sangmin do anything, Sangmin is the last pick in this draft. Sangmin is I have 2% trust in Sangmin because I have 98% trust that in any team format, Sangmin is going to immediately look for whatever he can do to sell out his whole team in exchange for a token of life.
Yeah, to inversely paraphrase that old LBJ quote, you want Sangmin outside the tent pissing in rather than inside the tent pissing out, basically.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Sangmin would certainly... I would never draft Sangmin above anyone else in the field. No joke. Just because I know he's easily the most historically willing and able to leave a team high and dry.
Yeah, the only draft that I would take Sangmin in is in one of these auction drafts we do preseason. Anything involving him being on my team on the Genius is not going to go well for me, I don't think.
Right, no, absolutely not. I mean, think about it. Like, when has he ever really... I guess the zombie game, he was a good human because he had no reason not to be. And Catch the Burglar, because they just kind of forced themselves into those preset things. But really, other than that, he's really screwed over, and we'll go on to see it later on this season, every team he's ever been a part of.
And he does it like in the Kong's Dilemma game, even when it doesn't seem to make that much sense with him at the time. It's almost like he delights in being able to screw over his team, and you know, he takes like this morbid pleasure in that. And so if Sangmin ends up on my team, I am terrified, and I'm also not going to be very happy at whoever it is that picks Sangmin to be there with me.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Team Jinho is Jinho and Doohee, Yu Young, Hong Chul, and Jung Hyun. And Team Yunsun is Yunsun, Sangmin, Yeowon, Juwon, and Youngkyul. And I thought it was really like an interesting peek into Korean culture when they were doing this kind of like schoolyard pick. As it got down to the last few people, Hong Chul was calling them like the trash people, and then was so excited because he was less trash than like Jung Hyun, whoever else didn't get picked.
Yeah, and Youngkyul being the last pick ends up looking very significant in the line of what comes later. And, you know, I'm not quite sure to what extent him being picked last was like a catalyst for that, but you have to imagine it played a part. The other thing, which obviously does not really stand out at the time, but certainly does when you know the full context, is Sangmin picking Yeowon, not just because it isn't one of these other broadcasters, and you might expect that to be a thing there, but him picking Yeowon, given that they end up finding that token of immortality together and then being the final two, you know, you have to wonder what their relationship was like at this stage and how that developed going forward.
Yeah, and that is something that I have thought about, and I feel like just in general, there are too many people there. Even when we get these hour-plus-long episodes without commercials, there's still, you know, given as kind of comprehensive of a show as The Genius kind of prides itself on being, there's just not enough airtime to go around, even for someone like Sangmin. Like, in these early episodes, it's pretty unclear what Sangmin's even up to.
Yeah, and one big contrast between The Genius and a show like Survivor or Big Brother is we don't really have the same kind of confessional format, so it's rare that we get just a long, unvarnished look at what one person is thinking at any given time. And they do have these behind-the-scenes videos for each episode, but those tend to highlight a few like comedic moments from the episode. We don't really get like a three-minute confessional from G1 saying what he's thinking after episode 5 or anything like that. So going back to the Sangmin and Yeowon thing quickly, I wonder why Sangmin picked him. Not least because Yeowon's record in main matches so far and indeed in the future is not going to be that great. So I wonder if it's because he thinks that Yeowon is someone that he can kind of bowl over and really, you know, and who's not going to stop him from doing what he wants. Or is there some like ulterior motive there?
I guess one possibility is just out of the people who were remaining. I mean, when Jinho's off the table... and you are Sangmin, Yeowon is probably going to stand out as like the most game savvy, right?
Well, in theory, but is that really borne out from his performance so far at this stage of the game?
It's not even... Listen, we're three games into The Genius, which is a high-variance game. This guy's got... He's the greatest StarCraft player of all time. Like, there's something to that. There's more to life than just how he did in the first main matches, I think. Like, Yeowon is clearly, out of the people left on the table, the best player. And that would at least... the best mind for strategy games. And that would at least be my thought. Or maybe it was something... If when Jinho already picked Doohee, he didn't want Yeowon to also then be on that team.
Oh, that's actually, yeah, that's a very good point. I also think Yunsun wanting Yeowon on her team maybe has something to do with that as well. Like, you don't want to offend her so early. And yeah, when the other picks are like G1, Junghyun, even though I love him, and Youngkyul, you know, that's not really a great pool to pick from.
Well, and it's also, if Jinho's the captain of the other team, I'll take the guy who's made a career out of embarrassing Jinho.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So actually, given all of that, this starts to make a lot of sense. Sorry. Continue.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, and I believe this is the third time out of the first four main matches where we're going to get to have a rehearsal run of this game just to familiarize the players in the audience with how all of this is going to work. And Yoon Sun's team gets to practice defending first, and they go through and do that. And then Sangmin and Yeowon collaboratively come up with this idea to, when they go on offense, just everyone cross immediately, and the other team will pick them off, and then the other team never really gets to practice defending. Yeah, which I think is, you know, maybe, like, malicious is too strong of a word. I think it's certainly crafty is the word I would use for that. Like, I think it is a smart idea in general. I don't know necessarily if it goes kind of in the spirit of the genius style of, like, fair play. But it's certainly not a bad idea by any stretch. Yeah. So Sangmin, wouldn't you know it, Dom, Sangmin is not thrilled about the team that he ended up on. And his plan now is to immediately hang them out to dry if he can find a way to do so, you know, without them finding out. But they're all quickly on to him, of course, because they've seen him. They've met him, I suppose. And they know what he's up to. And so he's trying to sell this to them like he's a double agent trying to exploit the other team and like their confidence in him for his own team's benefit. It's really good stuff. It's reminiscent of Kong's Dilemma, where he gets caught, essentially, and then is trying to back his way out of it.
Yeah, another reason that the genius is so interesting and varied week to week is you can have these games where one person will totally screw it up or totally botch it for themselves, and then the next week they can be riding high again and look really good. Like, given what you know about how well Sangmin does this season, if you showed this episode in isolation to someone who didn't know who Sangmin was, they would come away thinking that this guy's just an idiot and has no idea what he's doing. And then this is the same guy who wins 9 out of the other 10 main matches and wins the final as well. So, you know, clearly this guy is incredibly talented, but in this game you just don't see any of that on display. And you contrast that with a show like Survivor, where, barring a kind of Mike Holloway-level blow-up, when a good player is doing their thing, it's often just continuous throughout the entire course of the season. There's not really ever a lull in that.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to the same thing happened in Season 1. I think Sangmin was probably the most dominant player in general in Season 1, but he certainly had bad weeks from time. Like, he had a bad stretch in Season 1. Yeah, so it's not like this is the first time we've seen Sangmin not actually succeed with a plan. He just always, I think, comes across as so, like, clever, even in failure, that people still think about, like, people think back on Kong's Dilemma, and the highlight in their mind is Sangmin, like, air-miming, dropping no Kongs into the thing. Okay, so we get into this game, and Sangmin, as we talked about, is going to try to get in with the other team, but his team sees through it. So his plan now is he's going to establish trust with the other team and then lie during the second round. Like, he's going to give them good information for the first round and then betray them, and his team is going to win from the second round. Although the other team blatantly sees through it, your boy Junghyun presses the red button on that second round, killing three of the players from Sangmin's team. And honestly, this is a very quick main match because it's over as soon as Sangmin's team is done.
Yeah, and Junghyun's team was telling him not to do that, but he went against the grain, he followed his judgment, and this guy's a savant. He knows everything you're trying to do, you can't get anything past him, and he just snapped it off just like that. He's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, he really did, and his team, it was cool seeing, you know, he goes back and he's all excited that he killed three of the people from the other team, and his team is all happy for him. It was really good stuff. But, you know, because I don't think we've even mentioned this yet, but there is a caveat that, you know, there are 5 rounds, and you can only press the red button, as in the did cross button, 4 times out of those 5 rounds. So when everyone dies on Sangmin's team, all the other team has to really do is send one person each round, and they are guaranteed victory.
Yeah, and that's where the game kind of breaks down, I think, where if that result does happen early on, then the rest of the game is just a formality, and there's not even much point watching it.
Right, that's the thing is, the team who goes first has to get at least one person through or else it's over, which is just another reason that I don't think this game works all that well.
Yeah, like, it's an interesting concept in a way, but just not for the genius. And insofar as this game is a success, it's because it acts like this conduit for drama and not because it's really that good in its own right.
Well, I would say it's certainly a game that can be very interesting, but under these circumstances, it's just rarely going to be the case.
Yeah, it's going to be good when it involves some kind of betrayal like this. And, you know, maybe it's good as a game because often it will lead to that kind of betrayal. But at the same time, that's going to be true of most games that you could include, I think. And this one just didn't seem that well suited to what the genius is or what they were trying to do.
Yeah, so all of Team Yoon Sun dies before they even get to round 5. And now Jinho's team knows that it's over if they just send one person each round. So Jinho's team here is going to be immune. And this is always an interesting situation where they win as a team, and it's not like whoever did the worst on the losing team is the deathmatch candidate. It's the winning team all get together and decide who on the losing team is the deathmatch candidate.
Yeah, and in those circumstances, the winning team is unlikely to have this collective grievance against one member of the losing team, so other factors are going to come into play here. So things outside the context of the immediate game.
Right, and you know, in this particular case, the things that come into play are Yunkuel, which we haven't really even gotten to yet, is the reason that this game ends up going the other way. You know, we hit on the Broadcasters Alliance and so forth being his motivation for selling out his team. But he really was, you know, when we get the flashback this episode, he intentionally botched the practice round to give the other team some more shots at defense. He relayed their information and so forth. Yunkuel really is the primary reason that this team lost. And unfortunately, the other team lets that slip, and his own team knows that Yunkuel is the reason that they lost.
Yeah, and that storyline, I thought, was actually quite well done. It made the episode feel like kind of like a whodunit episode or some kind of mystery where, you know, there's one person who's the mole and, you know, they're going to get exposed eventually. The way that this gets blown up, though, is actually kind of interesting because Jinho's team is at a loss to know who to send to the deathmatch, and they don't really have any obvious reason to send one person. So they call the losing team in for interviews, one by one, to kind of quiz them and determine who should go in. And as they're doing that, Yunsun picks up on this comment by Yuyong, which I don't think was meant to highlight Yunkyo's role in all of this, but inadvertently does, and she relays that back to her team, and then his whole spot is blown up here.
Right, she says something like, he was listing through who might get picked, and he listed a few people, including Yunkuel, and she goes, yeah, you might. I guess you'd have a good reason for all of them. And he's like, wait, what would the reason be for Yunkuel?
Yeah.
And so they you know, retroactively do the math. And apparently the deal was Yunkuel said he would give the other team the win, essentially if they all agreed that they would pick Jawan to be the deathmatch candidate, because Yunkuel, first of all, is scared of this Broadcasters Alliance. And then also I would imagine Jawan is not someone he's particularly feeling that great about.
Yeah, although if you want to break out the Broadcasters, why is it G1 who you're going after and not Hongzhou, who seems to be more charismatic and have a better idea of what's going on, or Sangmin, who has played the game before and seems to be doing pretty well this season?
Well, I think the idea there may have at least potentially been, yes, there is a lot to be said for picking someone else out of that group if you're trying to do the most lasting damage. But I feel like he probably viewed Jawan as the safest bet to go to the deathmatch and lose the deathmatch and just dwindle their numbers.
That's true. And also, if he does have to be overt about this or his role does get exposed, then if G1's there, he might end up picking Yunkuel, and he'd rather face off against G1 in that scenario than Sangmin or Hongzhou.
Yeah. And I also thought it was really interesting because the other team does go through and give him what they want, where they do pick Jiwon here to be the deathmatch candidate, and I think we've never really seen it flagged up before, but it really could change things in certain spots, where at least in this instance, they were given a bunch of time between the deathmatch candidate being selected and that person picking their opponent. Like, they were given time to sit and talk through all of it, which is, we've at least to this point never seen that be the case before.
Yeah, and we see Jinho get frustrated that his team isn't able to fulfill their side of the bargain to Yunkuel here, because he feels, and understandably, that if Yunkuel was able to follow through on his side of it, then they should at least kind of repay him in turn. And even though they do make sure that G1 gets in, they've essentially assured that Yunkuel is going to be joining him there, and there's no guarantee that they can make sure he stays.
Right. At a certain point, it's almost like once they've blown up his spot, the biggest favor they can do for him is pick him to be the deathmatch candidate, him being Yunkuel, so that he can pick whoever he wants to play against instead of, you know what I mean? But I it probably doesn't change anything. I'm sure he probably still picks Jawan to be his opponent. Anything else just in general on the blackout game? All right, so let's get into this deathmatch. We are, just like the fates drew it up, it's Jawan against Yunkuel here. We are once again playing Sun, Moon, Star. And this is, as I alluded to earlier, Jinho picked his symbol first here, where he remembered the first time that they played this game between Hongzhou and Jaekyung, that you can see what you know, if the first few people all go heavy on one of the symbols, you can tell that when you're one of the later people picking their symbols. So after he picked his, he shuffled around all the bottom, many of the bottom symbols to make it so that you couldn't actually tell, which was, I thought, was a really heads-up idea. And it also pays huge dividends because Sangmin noticed later on that the stack for the star cards was lower, and he bet Jinho a garnet that he had picked a star, that he, Jinho, had picked a star. And he also instructed Juwan to be betting a lot on stars, so Sangmin really got, like, double owned here.
Yeah, not a great episode for Sangmin all round, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, so Sun Moon Star, we've played this game before. As we talked about earlier, it was essentially a popularity contest the first time, especially when they were able to bet on it. And then, you know, I guess it, just in this particular iteration, Yunkil, of course, ends up losing here. And on the turn where he busted guessing Doohee's symbol, and you, Yunkil went all in on what Juwan, who had basically perfect information, could be quite certain was not going to be the right symbol. Like, Yunkil had just bet all of his chips on what Juwan could think would be wrong and thus would lose the game for Yunkil. However, instead of betting on other, you know, whatever he thought was the winning side, he followed that bet onto that same symbol because he recognized Yunkil's all in here. If this symbol is wrong, he's out and it's over because I have chips behind. However, if my information is wrong, I'm super fucked if Yunkil is right if I don't follow this bet.
Yeah, that's a smart play there just to cover your bases. And even the even though these two don't strike you as like these kind of smart players, there is this one good moment here as well where I think it's G1, although maybe I'm incorrect. I think he knows which one of the three the upcoming choice is going to be, and he kind of misdirects Yunkil by spilling his chips on the other two, which I thought was kind of an interesting move.
Right, there is a certain element to that, and there's another game in Season 3, a deathmatch game, that I think really nails that kind of balance to make it much less of a popularity contest, but still make gathering information important, but like give the person on the outs at least a fighting chance to win. But yeah, you're absolutely right, that was very good. Like, there is that extra level of like deception trying to induce an incorrect bet. Yeah, so like, it's not that everything is wrong with Sun, Moon, Star, I would say. It's just there's too much of a vested interest for the people who are not actually competing in the deathmatch. Yeah, so that is the end of Yunkil, the magician. Pretty cool, I mean, arguably cool profession. I think it would be cool in some settings to be able to do magic, but I think, generally speaking, the people drawn to being professional magicians, maybe not so much.
Well, it's either like, either you're very good at your job, in which case it's highly impressive, or you're not very good, or you kind of or you're working at a low level, in which case it just seems kind of tacky sometimes.
Yeah, and speaking of seeming kind of tacky, always, never wear sunglasses inside.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're moving on to episode 5, and this is going to mark the start of Jinho's eventual downfall in episode 7, I think. And if you take a moment to look at the state of play going into this round, you know, Jinho has won each of the first 4 games, coming off of his win in season 1. Meanwhile, Sangmin has been kind of struggling for position, hasn't really been able to get much going. He's won 2 of the 4 games, and that's, you know, that's good, but it's, you know, nothing too impressive so far. So for Jinho to spend the next 3 episodes fighting for his life and eventually fall to G1, and so Sangmin loses the blackout game, but after that point he is untouchable. He can't, you know, he is never without immunity of some form until the finals. And so all of these plans that come together later, all this discussion about how we need to take down Sangmin or make him burn his token of immortality, all of that never comes to fruition because he just wins every single main match from this point forward.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Jinho to this point has won all 4 of the first 4 main matches, and recently, and incidentally, Junghyun has as well. And this is a new record for the genius, and it's so funny because recently, someone I'm sure even you have heard of over in England, not a sports fan, LeBron James just recently took his team. He just went to his 5th straight NBA Finals, which is, he's the first person to do it outside of like the old school Boston Celtics teams that just crushed everyone. And they were like, wow, LeBron James, first person to go to 5 finals in a row in forever. And then they also had to make a clarification because this one guy would just happened to be on his team the whole time too. James Jones, who was like the Junghyun type, where like he just happened to also be there as LeBron was winning all of these games.
But as we know, Jinho just got there by luck, whereas Junghyun, you know, through his skill and wit and charisma, was able to engineer that for himself.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But no, as what you were saying is, yeah, from this point forward, it doesn't really, I think it kind of culminates in episode six, which we'll get to shortly, but yeah, from this point forward, Sangmin is never again vulnerable for a death match, which is just absolutely ludicrous to think about, considering this is episode five.
Yeah, you look at the graph on Wikipedia that charts the course of the game, and Sangmin's row is win, safe, win, safe by default because he wins that game, and then winner. So like that is when you kind of visualize it like that, it just looks so absolutely dominant, which it is, and you know all credit to Sangmin. Although as we're gonna see in a moment, part of that is he just gets incredibly lucky with his starting draws in some of these games.
Yeah, well, let's go back to just like the state of play entering this game, because like we were getting to, Jinho really has been the one that's been doing like the one that's coming across as like the dominant player of the season to this point.
Well, look at Yuan's row as well. It goes safe, 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 death match, safe, 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 death match, runner up, which is maybe even more impressive than Sangmin's in one regard.
That's true. It just never actually. Yeah, okay.
There is no green on that row whatsoever. He is the only person other than Huizhong and Yunsen to never win a game.
Yeah, to bring up Will Kirby again, it's like him never winning a competition to win the season. Yeah. Okay. So Jinho and Doohee are the first people to come in this week. And again, Jinho has gotten every single hint to the Token of Immortality to this point. So they are going to, before everyone else shows up, try to go and find this Token of Immortality, and they can find the safe, but they don't know anything about the combination. And I think it's pretty incredible. And I don't know how much shenanigans there is to this or what, or if they know if there's a standard amount of time between when people enter. But it seemed pretty incredible, right? That they had time to find the safe, test it out a couple of times, and then put everything back on the shelf and like put all the signs back up before anyone else shows up.
So I'm thinking here, as Jinho's looking, he won the first season, he wins the first four games here. If he can find this token, then he has to be the overwhelming favorite to just win again and really cement his
Yeah.
position as the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean we obviously go on to see, especially in the end game, just how staggeringly powerful that token can be in some spots. So yeah, absolutely. I think Jinho would easily have been the front runner, especially, I mean, not only because he has the token of immortality and because he seems to be on a heater, but he is a really capable player. Like we give him shit for being overrated, but he's better than pretty much everyone else. He's just not, I think, in the super elite tier.
Yeah, and Jinho and Doohee here both talk about how much they either don't want to work with Yunsen or Jinho actively says he wants to take down Yunsen, and yet Jinho finds himself forced to work with her in this episode, and I think that's a sign of just how little purchase he has within the wider group at this point.
I think it's just one of those games, right? And this is partially why we love the show, where it's one of those draw games, as we'll get into, where your personal bill, if it lines up nicely with someone else's personal bill, that's the name of the game this week. So there's not like the ability to look past that is going to come in super handy. Yeah. Okay. So let's, I believe, just get into it. People are the game itself is Seven Commandments. A little bit of a lofty title, considering this is basically just a vote into these public bills, right? These aren't exactly coming down from Mount Sinai. Is that an accurate reference to the Bible, by the way?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Maybe Jung Hyun is supposed to be the Moses figure here. I don't know.
Okay. So everyone's going to draw a personal bill, and then global bills are going to be put up for like nomination almost, and then pass. And everyone's going to have chips, and they're going to get points based on what bills pass. And what color their chips are. And incidentally, they're going to be playing this whole game on software designed by Doohee. And at this point, I think they all are fairly wondering about the quality of Doohee not hacking into their stuff, because it seems like Doohee's been not, quite the backstabber to this point. Yeah. But that's, I also thought it was kind of cool, just in all honesty, that Doohee got to design the software. I thought that was kind of like a fun little thing.
Yeah, I also liked that Yuan is kind of noting down the rules and everything, and that Dita just tells him to just take a picture. And Yuan kind of stares at her as if the idea had never crossed his mind, and it's the greatest thing he'd ever heard.
Was that the revelation to rival Columbus?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. What was I about to say? Oh, I think it's interesting that like, certainly for like you or me, neither of us could design this software to save our lives. But I'm sure it took Doohee like 10 minutes to piece together this thing to just, vote on one of four options.
Yeah, it's always kind of scary to me how many things I rely on in my day-to-day life that I know absolutely nothing about. There were so many things in my house, if they broke down, I would have no idea what to do. It would just be catastrophic.
Well, we're certainly heading in the direction that the people like Doohy, like the true tech geniuses, are the people with the real power. Like, understandably so, because we're just so, I mean, not to go on and on about this, but like, we are so dependent on technology at this point that the people who can manipulate that are the ones who are really in charge. But anyway, let's go back. Let's go, dystopian futures aside, let's get into this game where everyone's also going to get a wild card, which they can use to sign or veto instead of just voting for like regular power. And everyone only gets one of them to start. But you can also, there are various other ways to acquire them along the way. And only 7 of these global bills can be active at any time. So they're, you know, if we get more that come into play, they are going to expire in the order that they passed, which is worth noting. And the most points at the end of the game based on the chip count is the personal, or is the winner of personal immunity, as Reynold would tell you.
Yeah, and these bills are drawn from this book of draft bills that everyone gets handed. And so it's, there's some degree of customization, but not too much. And without knowing exactly what those bills are or how much leeway you have with that, it's hard for us to comment on what the right play is. But naturally, we're going to try anyway.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's hard to talk about this game without seeing the full rule book. Although I, for one, and you guys are probably all excited that we don't have the full rule book, because we would sit here for 3 hours talking about it if we did. But yeah, I think we know generally enough to at least comment on it about what some of the general ideas are. I think more interestingly is just like the personal bills, what you draw on that and how you should go forward.
Yeah, and one of these key rules here is that they frame it as you have to return all of your chips if you sign or veto without a wild card. But for some people, that will become you get to return all your chips if you sign or veto without a wild card. Or I guess for other people as well, you know, you have this this wild card in the bank, but you have to pay the certain price for it. So I think that rule potentially can dictate a lot of what happens in this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, we should just get it out of the way right away, because for however long we talk about this game is almost impossible for whoever draws the bill that Sangman drew to actually lose, because of that wild card caveat where it becomes you get to get rid of all your chips. When your bill is, if at the end of the game you have 0 chips, you get 50 bonus points. When it's looking like anyone else is going to be hard-pressed to even hit 20, that is, if you just use your wild card and then use another sign or veto, that's it. You've won the token of life.
And that process is repeatable, right? So every single time he could just say, I am trading in my non-existent chips for a wild card. Regardless, Sangman's bill effectively means he gets to not only negate the disadvantage that you start with in the game, where you only have one wild card, but it actually turns that into an advantage. And it's such an overwhelming advantage that at the end of the game, you're almost guaranteed to have the most points. So, yeah, Sangman is really playing this game on easy mode.
Yeah, well, let's get into some of these other roles. And the place I want to start is with Doohy, because I think it's, first of all, very fitting that he's wearing that awesome gun sweater in this episode. Which is fantastic, because his role is that he gets to discard one chip of any color from anyone whenever a new bill gets passed. So it really is pretty critical for anyone who wants to have success in this game, at least when it comes to manipulating the chips, to be on Doohy's good side, right? So there are a ton of bills that some kind of work individually, like this one, where Doohy, you just blanketly need to be on his good side, or he probably is going to put an end to whatever your plans are. And then there are some, like we'll see with Yoon Sun and Yeowon later on, that really need to be working together, and then they're going to have a great chance of controlling the game.
Yeah, a lot of these other bills rely on, you know, you having a certain amount of chips or a certain number of chips of a certain color. And the issue with that is that bills like the one that Doohy has can make that a difficult proposition. And also you have Sangman's bill and a few other bills which just kind of circumvent all of that and which make it ultimately irrelevant to the real game. So you can still win if you have one of those bills, but it's going to be a lot harder.
Right, and that's why Sangman's bill generally is so powerful. It's because there's nothing you can do about it. All he has to do is use his wild card and then intentionally dump his chips.
Well, see, I was wondering with Yoan's bill, which allows him to give away chips, does the other person have to accept it? Or, because if they do, surely at the end he could just dump Sangman with a few leftover chips and negate that.
But can't Sangman then just use another fake wild, like not just sign or veto without a wild card?
Yeah, I guess maybe if they pass that bill that says that bills can't be signed or vetoed anymore, then I assume that means Sangmin can't discard his chips in that fashion. So if you're able to pass that, then you could do that strategy if you were Yuan.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah, that does, although, like, that really seems like the only thing that counts is even remotely, like, reasonable counterplay against Sangmin's bill, right? Like, it seems like if you don't pass that, he's going to win.
Yeah, and as we're going to get onto in a second, ultimately, unless your personal bill is as powerful as Sangmin's is, it's kind of irrelevant, because if you're able to form a majority and take control at the start, which seems like the obvious thing to do, then everything else kind of falls by the wayside.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess in general, Sangmin was sharing about what his bill was from the beginning, and I think it was actually when he shared it with Juwan just, like, started bowing down to him, like, I can't even compete with this bill. So it really is another one of those games where if Sangmin's being honest about his bill, like, if he shows you his bill or whatever, it almost becomes more about just getting on Sangmin's good, or almost, like, getting on the good side of the person who looks like they have the worst bill, like, the person who's going to be in the worst shape so they don't pick you.
Almost, yeah. And maybe Juwan was doing that because of how bad his own bill was, his point total is equal to the number of blue chips that others have, which firstly just has such a low ceiling on how many points you can acquire. Like, you're never going to get to the 50 that Sangmin has. You'll have like 8 or 10, maybe, if everything goes perfectly. And also, it's dependent upon other people using their bills in a way that benefits you. There's no, you know, you don't really have anything to offer anybody else. You don't have a power that other people don't. You're just hoping that things align in the right way for you.
Yeah, his bill is tragic.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I think if you want to say that this game in particular is imbalanced, I mean, that's the perfect example of that. You contrast G1's bill with Sangmin's bill. And if you swap the two of them in those positions, G1 wins this game every time and Sangmin would never win that game. Yeah. So there's not really any room for play skill there.
Yeah, it really is much more so than the difference between, I mean, not even comparable. What's the biggest disparity? The eagle versus, like, the deer or whatever, and it's not even close between Sangmin's bill and Juwan's bill.
Yeah, and even in that case, you have that question of, well, as the deer, I have a weak role, but I'm not going to get picked for the deathmatch. Often, whereas with this, it's just, if you have Sangmin's bill, congratulations, you are safe, you've won the game, you get however many garnets you get for winning, and the clue in addition, so yeah, it's just a bit overpowered.
Yeah, I think this is the one. So they get 7 garnets, just for the record, for winning this main match. And this is actually, when we get there, this is where it really it starts to snowball as far as the garnet disparity between Sangmin and everyone else.
Yeah, we're going to reach a point in the season soon where Sangmin has over half of the total garnets in play with like 7 or 8 people left, which is just like absurd.
Well, because God's Judgment isn't going to be until part 2, let me pull that stat up now because I think it is really interesting and people would want to remember this exact number. Let me find this. I can't find it right now, but off the top of my head, I believe it was after God's Judgment, Sangmin had 35 garnets. The next highest was Yuyoung at 8. A couple people had 3, and then 3 people had 0. He had like 35. He had 35 out of like 50 garnets.
And of course, it's Yuan and Junkyun who have 0, because who else would it be? Come on.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's roll through a couple of these other personal bills here, because I think it's safe to say Sangmin obviously drew the winner bill. Not Juwan's bill, not so much fun. Let's get into a couple of the other ones. Let's get into what bill do you want to get into next? I guess some of them aren't that interesting.
Yunsen's bill is powerful, but I want to say it's a trap, because we see early on she denies a chance to be brought into this majority so that she can pursue her own personal bill, and that ends up leading to her being outcast and then eventually losing the game. So maybe it's a little bit dangerous as well. Her bill is, whenever you receive chips from another player, you gain a wild card per chip, which, if the game is going to be decided on a narrow margin with both teams wanting to use wild cards, then that could be very powerful. And also, it creates this synergy with a bill that somebody else has. And so that's a natural alliance right there. And it's also a way for her to get her foot in the door in terms of alliances. So if the large alliance that exists at the moment needs her bill, then they have to bring her in. And there's not much that they can do about that.
That is true. The problem, I think, is, and we saw it kind of play out this way, where she spends most of the early game no one's really useful to her unless they can give away chips. And it takes her a while to find Yuan who can actually give away chips. So there is kind of maybe she got unlucky that the person who drew the bill that works with hers wasn't part of like a concrete alliance that had other bills that worked well together. But I think in a lot of timelines, that's going to be the case. And this role, this bill, I should say, really only works well with one other one.
Yeah, maybe she got unlucky that it was Yuan specifically who drew this bill, because if it was, it would be interesting if Yuyong got it, actually, because the two of them seem to have some kind of issue with each other. And so if they were forced if they were given the most compatible roles, then that could be fun. But if it was Doohee or Jinho or someone else who got it, then I think that would have worked out a lot better for her. But again, when you can't count on that, and you also have this offer on the table of this alliance, which if it forms properly can just run the game the whole way through, then I think you just have to go with that.
Okay. Because we see later on that between their two bills, where she can get wild cards whenever she's given chips and Yuan can give away chips, Jinho thinks eventually that they figured out a way, I think it was Jinho, figured out a way to get essentially infinite chips and wild cards or something along those lines. But it's really going to take something like that actually coming together and working out to overtake Sangmin yet again.
Yeah, so the other aspect of Yunsen's bill is that if you can find a way to create this loop or to do something outside the normal boundaries of the game, then there is a very high ceiling on what you can do with it. However, that also requires passing a certain bill, which if you don't have this alliance in place, is never going to happen, because they will see this coming and they won't let you do it. So everything else to me seems secondary to the question of getting this majority that you can use to force your bill through.
Yeah, well, one other thing about Yunsen's bill where, when she gets a chip from someone else, she gets a wild card for every chip she gets. I don't know if wild cards are transferable, but if they are, it kind of puts you almost, it's not directly comparable, but you're almost like the person who holds the power of veto and is not nominated, where people then, if this is transferable, people are going to be mad at you for not giving them wild cards or not using the veto on them,
Yeah, you become the sole like gatekeeper to success in the game, and that's great if you're able to convert that into a win. But if you aren't, whoever ends up losing will almost certainly blame you for their loss, and that's a really tough position to be in.
Right, and the same thing can be said about. The same thing can be said that I kind of skipped over when we're talking about Doohee's role, where he is the one removing chips at will. He really is going to be playing spoiler for a lot of people, and a lot of people who probably are going to be on the losing end are going to have reason to be mad at specifically Doohee.
So Junkin's bill, he actually has a choice. He can change a chip color at the end. He can remove a chip color from play, so he can say everyone's green chips get removed. Or he can invalidate a chip color and make it worth 0 points, which in some cases is essentially going to be removing a chip color from play. And that is kind of a cooperative role in the sense that if someone needs to have a certain number of blue chips at the end, or they need all their chips to be green or something like that, then he can make that happen, and that person will have to suck up to him. At the same time, he can also use that aggressively to try and make sure that someone gets the fewest points. So if you can organize it that one person has all the yellow chips at the end, and now you've invalidated all the yellow chips, then that person is guaranteed to have 0 points. The issue there, again, is that Junghyun's bill is unlikely to make him the sole winner, and therefore that puts him in danger of being picked in retaliation.
Well, not only that, it not only gives him very little chance of being the sole winner, it also makes it very likely, given some of the powers that he has, if he's straightforward with other people about what he's capable of at the end of the game, and they recognize, hey, we could target someone and ensure that they come last if Junghyun's willing to remove their chip color, like change it or remove it or invalidate it or whatever. This could potentially be the Death Destroyer of Worlds bill, where a lot of people, kind of like an extreme version of Doohee's bill, where you can almost single-handedly ensure someone comes in last in certain timelines. So this is not an enviable bill by any stretch either. It really is obscene how much better. Like Sangmin got it appears to be the one good bill. I'd be really fascinated to see this game play out with just Sangmin's bill removed.
Yeah, because as it is, it's essentially, that Sangmin is going to win. The only question is who's going to lose, and that removes half of the fun of the game being played out. So, yeah, I think
Sangmin... that's called the second half of the Genius Season 2.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, Sangmin has proven that he can win games on his own merit, but it would be nice to see him be forced to actually do that in this case and not just get it handed to him on a silver platter.
Right, that's why I don't, like, this is the first game in his epic run of main match wins, but I don't think it really stands out as anything special because it was just so, I mean, it was a gimme. This is, now that I think about it, I can't believe I didn't consider this earlier. When we were talking during our season one podcast, I said that the burglar that Sung Yu drew in Catch the Burglar is the best role of all time. This is easily the best role of all time. I don't even know about that. I don't know about that. Maybe not. Actually, I would still probably take the burglar just because there are going to be timelines where they can pass that bill to prevent you from signing or vetoing, and you can theoretically lose, whereas the burglar is 100% victory.
Yeah. But either way, okay. I mean, you're very happy to draw either one of them.
Sure, yeah.
So we also have Yu Yong's bill. She can change all of her chips to one color at the end. So the question I have about that is, what's the order of priority between her bill and Jung Hyun's bill? Because potentially, if she ends up changing all her chips to blue and Jung Hyun needs an easy way out, he can just say, okay, blue chips are now invalidated. Sorry.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, there must be... I don't know. Did they even get into that? I feel like I would have written that down. But it is, absolutely critical, the order of operations, so to speak, as far as who has to go first there. Because once, if Yu Young exercises that ability, basically, and changes all of her chips into one color, Jung Young, if he gets to go after that, can automatically stick her with 0 points, or can stick anyone who uses the ability with that bill. He can, if he gets to go after them, can automatically stick him with zero.
Yeah, I don't know that Jung Hyun specifically would do that, and certainly not to his broadcaster Hubei. But given other players in those circumstances, I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, it seems like it almost. I bet Jung Hyun probably has to go first if there is some order of operations. Like, we do see games down the line with orders of operations.
Yeah, and we see specifically in season 3, not to give too much away, there is a game where the order of operations proves to be absolutely crucial in determining not only how the game plays out, but also whether the game is even fair to begin with.
Right, exactly. So I would suspect they have something in mind there, because it seems like you're absolutely right that other people, they don't know who's going to draw those two bills. And so, if Jung Hyun gets to go after whoever draws that bill, or if Doohee, who's all into sabotaging, gets to go after someone he's against who has that bill, it's just over. And there's no way to get negative points, right? So zero is guaranteed to be last.
Or tied for last, at least. Yeah, so...
Right. At best.
So once you get Yu Young's bill, you have to, assuming there isn't some kind of rule in place about that, you have to make sure you're on the good side of whoever gets Jung Hyun's bill.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't even know of the existence of that bill. I guess you can be pretty certain that someone's going to have we see plenty of people have to do with manipulating the chips and the colors of the chips and so forth. So I think there are probably a lot of people where you have to get on their good side again if you're Yu Young. And again, it's just like, they all seem like such awful draws. I guess, like, that would be the surest sign of a fair game if there wasn't this one god draw in there. If they all seem bad, then they're all fine.
Yeah. So moving on to Jinho's bill, he frames it in a very heads-up play. He frames it as chips of a certain color of your choice will be worth double the amount of points, which later leads people to believe that if they can make all chips of that color worth 0 points, then Jinho will be tied for last, when in fact it's additive and not multiplicative, if I'm pronouncing that right. So Jinho's chips are actually worth additional points, which means as long as he has chips of that color left at the end, he has some points and he'll be fine. He won't be tied for last if last is at 0 points.
Yeah, and again, I don't at all think Jinho is a bad genius player by any stretch. I think this is a really strong idea here to frame it that way, because he's not, I guess, like, he is lying certainly by omission and arguably, like, just outright lying because he's describing it literally inaccurately. But it is just, like, a great idea. Like, he could say, I guess I misspoke or whatever, even though, he later comes clean and says, oh, hey, I totally got you guys. This is why I did it, and I did it deliberately. But, he could have played it off as like, I guess I misspoke.
So we get to see these personal bills, and the example of a global bill that they decide to give us is signs and vetoes are no longer allowed. And it's interesting and maybe important that they choose to highlight that, because to me, it seems like the game is very easily solved, and they highlight this on the voiceover. If you can get a majority together and then just pass that bill, then there's no longer any risk of someone using a wild card at the wrong time, or the other team like perfectly coordinating their wild cards, because everything comes down to a majority vote. And if you have the majority, then you can just pass whatever you want and the other team doesn't get a look in. So it seems to me that would be the first and ultimate priority if you were playing this game.
Right, yeah, I totally agree. And that's something that we do see come into play, is that's their first idea as well, is, hey, get a majority together, pass this, and then our majority vote is all that ever is going to matter again. And just very quickly, we did pause and look this up before we get further into that. The way that the order of operations actually works is the people with the most garnets are the last people for their power to come into play. So the person with the most garnets is last. And in this case, conveniently for her, that's actually Yu-Young entering this round, has the most garnets, and Jung-Hyun has the fewest garnets. So he does have to declare his intentions before she does. But if those were switched, if he had more garnets than her, he theoretically could, after she picks what color she wants to make all of her chips, he could negate that color and give her 0 points if he had more garnets. He just happens to not.
Yeah, and that could play a similar role with G1 as well. So his points are equal to the number of blue chips that others have. And so his final total is going to be very heavily dependent upon what Jung-Hyun and others decide to do with their bills.
Yeah, and it also could make a big difference for Sangmin, because when this bill does end up passing here, the no more signs or vetoes bill, it means Sangmin no longer can just dump all of his chips at his leisure. He has to work to maintain zero chips, and theoretically could get...
Well, when that bill comes up, he can use all of his chips to either sign or veto it. However, one thing that can maybe counteract that is if Yoan is able to give away chips and he doesn't require the other person's consent, then he can stick Simon with a few chips, and then Simon wouldn't be able to get rid of those in any convenient way.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he still has to at least kind of work for it to get zero chips at the end of the game.
Yeah, it's possible that if Sangmin is in that majority and they want to keep him safe, they could pass a bill that says, okay, anyone can just give away chips. But, you know, who knows how that would play out. The other thing is, going back to what I said earlier about this idea of Yoan sticking Sangmin with chips, is depending on how it's done, like if it's the same thing as discarding chips, whether he just goes up to the board and makes his play, then when you only have a few seconds left on the clock, Yuan can run up there, give Sangmin a chip before Sangmin has a chance to propose a bill or really take stock of the situation, and that might be the only way to get rid of his advantage.
Yeah, this does seem like, because Yuan's bill is not the same, like Doohee can only get rid of a chip when a new bill comes into play, when a new bill gets passed. But I believe Yuan can just transfer chips whenever he wants. So you are right that he could just kind of wait until 3-2-1 end of game and stick Sangmin with a chip, and suddenly Sangmin is no longer getting 50 points. So this is another one of those games where the timing, like we talked about this, I remember, in the Final Four game when they had the partners in Season 1, where they should all be like waiting for the other people to bet first in the confined scamming horse race, or just any scamming horse race. You want to bet last, and this is another one of those things where that's why the order of operations, that's why we keep talking about it. It matters. It makes such a big difference because being able to go last, especially as time is running out, could be a massive game changer.
So Jin-ho does what we suggest and wants to pass a bill that removes signs and vetoes, but Yoon-sun is caught up in her own personal bill, which wouldn't really fit well with that, and so she decides to go off on her own and get the people currently outside that majority group together to try and overthrow it. And as we're going to see, it's not going to work. Hong-chul instantly sells her out to the majority and ends up in there himself. And so that's kind of a non-starter there. And we see Jung-hyun, of course, ends up flummoxed in some weird way where he proposes a bill, it gets voted down, of course. And then when talking to Hong-chul, he drops his card with his personal bill on the floor. And Hong-chul picks it up and takes a screenshot of it on the voting phone that they were given before giving it back. And he shows it to Yoon-sun as if it was his own personal bill, just to kind of lead it on a wild goose chase.
Yeah, that was great. Like, this is like Sangmin level trickery here. And coming from Hong-chul, I was really, really impressed. I know Jung-hyun is about as easy of a target as it gets, but I thought he did a really, really good job here. I thought this was really clever stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how much it actually amounts to here, but like, obviously if it is done for some great strategic purpose, that's fantastic. But also if it isn't and he's just doing it for his own amusement, I'm perfectly fine with that as well.
Yeah, And just kind of while you brought up Yoon-sun not really wanting to go with this early because it really hurts her, I think this is yet another one of, I know we kind of talked about this, but I think the more we see of this, the more the players, I should say, should be anticipating in these random draw games like this, particularly one where they're getting characters or bills that could just be outright bad, that really embracing the philosophy of there is more to life than just winning this main match, and really almost catering their style of play for the main match when you get a bill like this into more just staying out of the death match. I know we talk about it all the time, but I really think this game in particular hammers home. You know, we talked about how bad so many of these people's bills seem, particularly compared to Sangmun, but just in general. I think more than we end up seeing on pretty much every season of The Genius, people need to be willing to kind of drop their goal of winning the main match and really make their goal not being picked for the death match.
Right, which is why I think Doohee actually plays better in this game than has been reported, because his bill is going to lead to him discarding other people's chips, and that's going to be seen as a very aggressive move. And yet it seems like towards the end, he isn't even in consideration for someone who Yoon-sun wants to take to the death match.
Right, exactly. And I think you are right. I think for anyone to get away with that, given the bill that he had, is pretty remarkable. Especially wearing that gun sweater.
Of course, yeah. So Yu-Yong now proposes a bill which says, if your chips are all the same color at the end, you gain 15 points, which, you know, is very clear how that's going to work for her. My question here, and maybe this is just the philosophy degree in me trying to resurface, but does this work for Sangmin? Because if he ends up with zero chips at the end, does that count? Because technically, all of his chips are the same color, but in a sense, they aren't as well. So how does that work out?
Like Schrodinger's chips?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would say the non-philosophy degree in me says zero chips can't have a color.
I don't know about that. But in any case, apparently...
How can a girl be no one, Dom, if a girl has Arya Stark's sword? Yeah.
Apparently the producers agree with you for some unknown reason. So moving on from that.
Okay.
Junghyun, of course, thinks that Doohee and Yeo-an pass this bill, which shows that he's not really in tune with what's going on here. Meanwhile, Yoon-sun proposes a bill that says players must discard their red chips immediately, and her goal here is to make someone use their wild card. And I think that approach is something which I expected to see a lot more of, just throwing random bills out there that could be disadvantageous to someone just to make them burn their veto.
Absolutely, yeah. If you spot a couple of bills in there that could be a disaster for, if you've somehow learned about the personal bills from people on the other side, totally. Like, I think it's almost, and maybe there was more of this, like we saw, I think it was Hongchul just put one up because he was bored, right? Like he wanted to see what would happen if he just proposed some random bill. I think you're absolutely right. I'm surprised we don't see more like attempts at, because there's no penalty if your bill doesn't pass. You just can't propose that same bill again. But if it's useless to you either way, who cares? Why not make someone burn? Why not? It almost seems like it should just be like a line of them putting through as many bills as they can to see how many they can burn.
And it's tricky because if our understanding of the game is accurate, if you have this alliance of four or five people, they can just propose the same bill over and over again, and you don't have five wildcards, so eventually that bill is going to pass if they have the numbers to do it.
Yeah, and I also think, just while you talk about one bill being proposed over and over again, they didn't really point this out, or I don't remember them highlighting it much, but just looking back at the final seven bills that were in, that were active at the end of the game, three of them were identical, and I think that was done to like push out a couple of the bills that were at the top. Like the same bill went through three times in a row and ended up as three of the final seven bills.
Right. Like thinking about the amount of total bills you could pass, like if you have this group of four or five people, that's 50 bills potentially that you could force through. And so if something gets to the top of the list, which you don't want to be there, it's very easy to just keep passing bills until it's off the rotation.
Right. Exactly. And that's especially easy when on, you know, one of the active bills is that no one can sign or veto. And I think it's interesting, just kind of phrasing, because Sangmin's card says he can always do his power even if he has no chips. Like he can still try to sign and veto and just remove nothing. Nothing can't have a color, but it can be removed apparently. but at the same time, the no sign or veto thing, that bill says you cannot vote to sign or veto. So he literally doesn't have the option. Like, he can't do it when that bill is active.
Okay, yeah, I'm assuming that is the way that it works. And it's worth pointing out again, Sangmin can do that for every single bill that gets passed. So in theory, you know, if 120 bills get proposed, he can veto all 120 of them with no downside to him whatsoever. So that...
Right, yeah.
And in return, he gets enough points to win the game with no one even coming close to him. So ridiculously overpowered bill here, and nothing else
well, let me
really
ask
compares.
You, this is, again, I've got to start wondering... What are we missing? It seems like there's got to be something to this that makes this bill not obviously powers of 10 better than every other bill.
Yeah, maybe if it had a clause that said, you know, you lose a certain number of points for each chip you have left over. So, like, instead of winning 50 points, if you have a chip remaining, you are minus X points. Because then you could stick him with
right.
stuff at the end. But, yeah, it's just so... Like, because even if everything goes wrong with Sangmin and he does get stuck with a chip, he doesn't lose points. He gets however many points he would get based on that chip. So he can still end up, you know, towards the bottom, but still having points and be safe potentially.
Right. Like, I almost feel like this card, kind of like I almost feel this way, like this is the caveat with the burglar, is if you don't win the game, you're going to the deathmatch. I feel like this card should probably have maybe even the same caveat where... If you end up with any chips, you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like a zero chips equals win, one or more chips equals lose. That's your ability.
Because just looking over the list of personal bills here, I'm wondering if there's something which, like, we missed and they missed that, you know, if two bills interact in a certain way, then they can trap Sangmin or something. But I'm not seeing it at all.
That's what I was saying. Like, right when we started talking about this, it's really hard to... like talk about it in that much you know, despite what people listening may feel now that we're however long into this, it's hard to get into like the actual details of the strategy when we don't know what all of the options are, because there's got to be something, right? Like, there has to be some way to take down this bill other than pass the no sign or veto thing and keep the giveaway chips bill out of his alliance.
Yeah, the only thing I can think is if Jinho, Yunsen, and Yuan do manage to assemble that infinite loop, at which point they can pass stuff that generates a certain number of chips for them, which will rapidly outpace anybody else's. But even in that case, that's true of everyone else who's outside those three people as well. So, like, Yu Yong is going to fall victim to that, or G1, or, like, whoever. So that's not a unique disadvantage to Sangmin, but the unique advantages that he has are so incredibly powerful that it just blows away everything else.
Right, like, that's the one theoretical way to outscore 50 points, right? Like, that's the only way that we're aware of for anyone to even compete.
Yeah, let's get into that now, because Jinho is refusing to commit to Yunsen or Yuan, but it seems like the other side doesn't really want him either. And we see Yu Yong going around doing her thing, and Jinho says that Yu Yong hasn't really even said anything to him the entire day, and he threatens to take her to the deathmatch if he ends up last. So it's unclear how much credence she puts in that when she knows, if Sangmin stays true to his word, that she's going to get a token of life. But in any case, Jinho now needs to find another option, and when he realizes that this loop is possible, then he, you know, he really moves in on that and tries to make it happen. So basically the idea is, if they can make wildcards transferable and then let them be converted for chips, his alliance can get infinite wildcards and also infinite chips. But right. This is also contingent upon them being able to pass the bill that makes wildcards transferable, and if they aren't in the majority, which they aren't, then they can't make that happen.
Right, right. And I thought it was funny because when they all started trying to come together, it looked like they were all three kind of on the outside of what was happening, and Jinho was really just in like self-preservation mode, and they were clearly trying to work together with him, and his thing, he was like, no, just tell me what you have and what's going on, and then I'll figure something out for myself, and you guys can figure something out for yourself.
So, in theory, like, let's say Jinho, Yuan, and Yunsen do manage to get that majority together and pass that bill, they could generate an equally high, like, unbounded amount of chips for everybody in their alliance. So, if you have a group of six, then six people end up with 100,000 green chips or whatever. And so, in theory, if you take that to its logical extreme, they could designate two people that they want to go to the deathmatch and make sure that everybody else has an equally high amount of chips that can't be surpassed.
I think the one potential caveat with that is the order of operations, just again. Like, say Junghyun, I know it's tough because he would have to go first because he had the fewest garnets, but if he was even in the middle, if you want to try to pull that off on him, and the first few people who have to go before him start getting all 100,000 blue chips, when it becomes his turn, he can then make them worth zero.
Well, it could be 100,000 blue chips and 100,000 red chips and, you know, and so on and so forth.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the only thing I can think of is, once that happens, if there's a way to give one of those people an extra chip or take a chip away from them, like, if you give one person an extra chip, they become the sole winner, and then everyone else who is in that group now dips below that, and so they would be eligible. But, yeah, I'm not sure how that would happen.
Well, again, if you're Yuan and Yunsun and Jinho, and you're in the middle of the order as far as Garnet counts, and you're going to do all of this in the middle of of the abilities coming into effect, you then are putting a lot of faith in the people who act after you to not disrupt that.
Yeah, maybe you could say, in return for us giving you all of these chips, we want your garnets in return, just for safekeeping, so that when that happens at the end, we will have the most garnets.
Oh, because it doesn't go by who has the most garnets at the beginning of the round. It'll be when the time comes who has the most garnets.
I believe that's the way it works, yeah.
Okay, that's one possibility. Or even, we want all of your garnets, and then when all of this goes through successfully and we are all joint winners and everybody's happy, you're free to have all of your garnets back. But if that doesn't happen, we're keeping all of your garnets.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's at least one idea. Like, and again, they have no incentive not to give them their garnets back if everyone goes through with it and everyone gets their two people in the deathmatch. So that is certainly one idea. So maybe that's at least one way to take down Sangmin.
Yeah, so for that to happen, though, you need those three people to recognize that their bills will work together in that way and form a majority and, you know, get everything else together before something else happens. So I think that's the real sticking point here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does make you wonder, though, like, had Yunsun just agreed to Yu Yong's offer at the start and just remained in that majority? Because it seemed like Yu Yong wasn't really targeting who she wanted to bring in there. It was just, okay, we need people, and you're here, and you're here, and you're here. And together we make five, and let's just ride with that. And if that's the case, then of course you just agree and take the benefits of the guaranteed majority.
Yeah, I think that came into play probably quite often, particularly early in season one when Jimmy Cha was just trying to gather as many heads as possible for some majority in whatever the game was. I'm sure just being in the right room at the right time has saved a lot of people.
Yeah, it's like if Kieran Ran wasn't standing next to him in a certain episode, like, does everything in the season change via the butterfly effect? Like, who knows? So Yunsun tries to get this bill passed that would allow her to transfer wildcards, and she ends up being surprised that the other alliance was able to veto it despite only having two wildcards left themselves, because she had been banking on the three of them using their wildcards collectively to force it through. However, G1 and Sangmin exploit this rule that we've talked about at length of using a wildcard in exchange for all of your chips, and so they end up with four wildcards to Yunsun's three, and the bill is shot down. And so it looks almost certain at this point that Yunsun or someone in that group is going to be going to the deathmatch.
Yeah, and just to come clean, when this happened and I was like, oh shit, cool, the tables are going to get turned. They have three wild cards and they only have two. It didn't even cross my mind that they could basically exchange their chips for a wild card anytime they want. So I thought this was a classic cool genius reveal based on the stuff that we knew right from the start.
And so we move on to tallying the point totals now, and Jinho ends up being saved again because he had lied about the details of his bill. He ends up getting a point from his one remaining green chip, even though green chips now count for nothing. And as soon as that's revealed, he turns to Yeoan and says, "Hey, Yeoan, I was saved again," and just like really stabs a knife in. So he's fine, although he can still be picked for the deathmatch. Yunsun ends up getting 0 points, and she eventually picks Yeoan, and you have to wonder what Yeoan did so disastrously wrong to be picked by the one person that he turned his back on everyone else to try and help.
Yeah, and he brings that up. He says, "Hey, I blatantly turned my back on six people for you." And she says, "You turned your back on six people for yourself."
Just ice cold, yeah. And she's right, probably.
Yeah.
Because we see earlier in the episode, like, Yunsun and Yu Yong, like, physically dragging Yeoan to wherever they want him to be. So he's not really exerting his own agency here. He's just kind of a pawn in other people's hands.
Yeah, and by the way, rare Jawan strategic genius shout out here. As Yoon Sun's deliberating about who she wants to pick for the deathmatch, he offers her 5 garnets to not pick him, which, if you think about it, the way this plays out is she doesn't pick him, and then she loses, and he gets to keep those 5 garnets. He never has to pay her. So I can't believe we don't see this more. I'm surprised. Like, I would try to do this all the time. I'd just be rooting against whoever it is. I don't know. Just additionally, I thought it was just kind of weird, right, to see her pick Yeowon. Just given, I know he hasn't been that great, and probably even actively bad, I would say, in most of the main matches to this point. But when he's the best StarCraft player again of all time, and Hongchul is there and is like fiending to go to a death match, I don't know. Maybe it's a concern about if it becomes like a popularity thing with Hongchul. He's probably going to be someone people are going to want to keep around over her. But I don't know. I feel like picking Yeowon is at least surprising to me. I thought Yeowon would, we talk about this, or I guess we talked about it, in our All-Stars auction podcast. I feel like a lot of Yeowon's value is he's rarely going to get picked, right? Because he seems like a pretty intimidating opponent.
Yeah. Maybe you would pick like Junghyun there because he doesn't have the social cachet to make the others keep him. And he also seems like he would be fairly weak in the death matches. Although, as we see later, maybe that's not really the case. Going back to what you said about G1, I'm surprised that she didn't collect on that debt immediately, because surely this scenario could come up.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question then is, because it's not like, I don't think she would be concerned that he would not pay her. And I think she would rather have, if it doesn't work out for her, she would rather have him keep them than have them go to Yeowon.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
Possibly.
Although she does end up voting for Yeowon in the end and seeming like she is rooting pretty hard for him, so...
Yeah, no, I don't think there was any kind of like animosity or anything. I think it was just kind of a heat of the moment, the way the whole round played out. It was maybe almost like the fitting choice to pick Yeowon.
Sure. So we move on to the deathmatch now, and the deathmatch is Laser Chess, which is an awesome game with an awesome name.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think this is certainly the first time we see it. Really, really fun. It's probably not one that they can be running multiple seasons, because I'm sure as soon as they ran this, probably just the first time, at least Yeowon probably went home and studied it more in case he ran into it again, just given the way he seemed to be thinking about death matches he wasn't even playing in.
Well, it is actually a published game. It goes by the name of Khet, I believe, K-H-E-T. So if you want to play Laser Chess yourself, then you can go and study up on that. So we see this a lot where the death matches are modeled on games which do actually exist in real life. And I believe that's the way it works. It's not like it was based on the Genius franchise, which is now like licensing all of these games. So those kind of games are good for one use, basically, because once you know about it, you can go out and study and really become an expert.
Yeah. Ian Terry has somehow gone through, because not only the death matches, but also the main matches, he has found like 15 of them that are based on regular games that are like already published and stuff. And it's not like I'm saying, oh, this is plagiarism or whatever. I don't care at all. I think they're really fun games. I don't understand how he's finding all of them. Is he just like Googling the general description of the game?
And the rest of them he's using his students as lab rats for. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Laser Chess is fantastic. I think this is a really cool game. And I think honestly, part of the motivation for the Blackout game in general is they recognize that it looks really cool if you black all the lights out in the studio and have all these lasers going through it. So I think this may kind of like almost like gimmicky to a certain extent, but this is a really good use of it. I also love that they use just the floor itself is just black and white checked tiles, and they use that as the actual game board.
Yeah, my concern with the deathmatch, and maybe I'm not understanding it correctly, but surely it's possible to stalemate it if both players get their lasers blocked in.
That was my thought as well, is Yeowon figured out a surefire way to just make sure her laser could never fire onto the game board. And if she had figured that out as well, I'm sure it's possible, like, to just have a... Like, you are right. It seems like there was no defense against it. It's not like regular chess, where there is at least always some kind of, like, counter move for the most part. I think that's a concern I had as well. And I think they honestly got... I don't think it's really they got lucky that both players didn't figure out the perfect defense, because I don't think that's going to happen too often. But you are right that it's at least a concern for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it's a deterministic thing where given that starting position, every single time it's going to devolve into that with perfect play. But I think when you run the risk of that happening, especially with someone like Yoban, who you know is going to be thinking through the game and trying to figure out every angle, then you accept that as a risk. And I don't know what they would have done. Like, maybe they just do another heat of it and hope that a different outcome happens, but who's to say?
Yeah, they may do another round of it and maybe take a couple pieces off the board or something if it just keeps getting drawn.
Or they could do Fischer random with laser chest, just like keep mixing it up until something happens.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be crazy. Okay. So I guess, yeah, this whole episode, honestly, was really the Lawyer Yoon-sun show. And I was a big, big fan of hers on rewatch. She was someone who didn't really stand out to me the first time just because she wasn't on for really long enough. By the time she was gone, I was really just getting familiar with everyone and their names and occupations and stuff. But on rewatch, she really stood out. And I have some fantastic news. She's going to be back for All-Stars, and I'm really, really excited about that. And again, when I did my notes for this, I said she's someone I wouldn't hate seeing back on a return shot. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited for that. Any parting thoughts from you on Lawyer Yoon-sun?
Yeah, I liked her a lot, and I think another reason that I like season two is I think the female cast overall is very strong. So Yoon-sun is fantastic. Yoo Young, as I said, has improved a lot for me on a rewatch, and Dae, I think, had a lot of potential, and she shows that again when she comes back to star in the Snakes and Ladders game, but wasn't able to realize that. And so only Jake Young really was kind of a dud, although even she, I thought, was kind of endearing for the time that she was there. Well, just to recap what we said at the beginning, this is the start of Sangmin's complete and utter dominance from this point forward. So, you know, we're going to see Jin-ho gradually decline and then end up fighting for his life in the death match, and Sangmin will just be running the table from here on out.
Okay, Dom, the time has finally come. It is episode 6, and we are playing the Monopoly game. And I'm setting this up so monumentally because this is arguably, I would say, the biggest single episode in the history of The Genius, and for my money, one of the best episodes, if not the single best episode in the history of reality TV, just to get super hyperbolic right away.
Which you've never done before, so I'm sure this will come as a shock to people. But yeah, I mean, we've seen 30 seasons of Survivor, lots of seasons of Big Brother and other shows, and I'm sure across the entire sweep of reality TV there are episodes that can match this, but this has to be near the top. I mean, in terms of single moments that remind you why you enjoy watching these shows, the whole saga with the Token of Immortality at the end is just mind-blowing, frankly.
Right, we really get, this is a tale of two stories, to coin a phrase, where one is about the main match, which is going on, and Doohee and his lost ID, and simultaneously we're getting the story about what's going on with the Token of Immortality, and of course at the end, they end up just dovetailing beautifully together.
Yeah, a guy we know who is watching Season 2 as we speak and who is keeping us updated on his thoughts is a massive Sangmin fan and has been ever since the start of Season 1, so watching him kind of give us his thoughts on this episode in real time was really enjoyable because you could see the kind of excitement build and then at the end, just like the chat window just like exploding with messages.
Yeah, incredible. I waited a long time for him to get to this episode for sure. So let's get right into it. And the place to start here, we hit on this a little while ago. Sangmin, Jiwon, Hongchul, and Junghyun are the first four to come in this week. And they start talking about rumors that are circulating about Jin-ho, Yoon, and Doohee, which is a trio we've brought up before at this point. Those three have been apparently meeting up between the rounds, between filming. And so these four are saying, you know, hey, if they're trying to meet up and target the celebrities, we need to do something about that. And of those three, we'd like to target Jin-ho. And, of course, the way I think Korea interpreted this whole kind of broadcasters versus non-celebrities, so to speak, controversy was that the non-celebrities were the ones kind of being unfairly treated. And the way it's, at least at this point, being portrayed on the show is that these people, the broadcasters, are just doing what needs to be done to make sure they don't get picked off.
In which case, it's a perfectly natural response, I think, and it's hard to really fault them for doing that. It is hard to tell whether this was like a rearguard action as a response to Jin-ho, Yoon, and Doohee teaming up, or if this had been established for quite some time and this was just the way of formalizing it. Because, as we said, you do see hints at this, you know, even back in the first few episodes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly possible. And I will say, without getting into too much detail, But it's certainly going to be a big talking point when we talk about season three, because this whole controversy about the celebrities versus the quote-unquote non-celebrities had a big impact on the way season three was cast. So much more on that later, but that'll be certainly really interesting. And then the other big controversy that we mentioned is actually also from this episode, which is Doohy's ID getting taken and him essentially just not getting a chance to compete in the main match, which did not sit well with the Korean viewers, apparently. But we'll be getting there. So the way this game is played, Dom, there are going to be 64 total cards in play. The goal of the game is to get a monopoly on one of those resources. There are however many resources. I'm not even certain at this point. You can trade your cards with other people, although for whatever reason, you need an ID to present to the dealer if you want to make a trade, and certainly that will come into play in a big way.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, surely that shouldn't be relevant, right? I mean, why would that make any difference? But it ends up being the linchpin of one of the best, you know, episodes of reality TV and one of the best moments of reality TV that I think we've ever seen.
Yeah, I think this might have been a case where, and I think this is probably not the only time, if this is even one of the times, but I'm guessing there have at least been a couple of times where they've put in a game, like they often do, where there's some kind of trick or there's some way to, like, outthink it, and the players just don't see it. Like, I know in season three there was one where one of the secret scenes revealed one trick to the game that the players didn't pick up on. So I'm guessing there was some kind of angle to these IDs that they had it at least on the table that the players just didn't figure out. And I don't think theft was that angle that they had in mind, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if there was something more to it that they had in mind.
Yeah, we see, I think it's Jin-ho come up with the idea of using the IDs as a sign of trust. So if I give you my ID and you give me yours, then I'm committing to you that, you know, we're going to both act responsibly because otherwise we can just freeze the game for each other. But do you think that's what they're going for, or do you have any ideas about what this angle might be?
The only angle I could think of is, I'm not even certain about this, and this is something I should have written down, but if you present the IDs face down, which I think might have been what the case was, then it's possible you could go in and make a trade with someone, but if someone, like, they would unknowingly be trading with someone else that you're working with because you have someone else's ID, but it's face down so they can't see it. I don't know. To, like, make a trade go through that wouldn't otherwise go through.
Yeah, I guess if you own someone else's ID, then you can prevent them from taking part, as we see with Doohy, but can you use that ID to gain access to their cards?
Actually, that's not a bad idea. I don't see why you couldn't, considering they made it pretty clear that the ID is what is required to open one of the lockers. So if you're willing to blow up your own spot and, like, run the risk of Doohy coming and seeing you do that to his locker while you're in the process of doing it, I think that would actually be within the rules. So I would guess they at least checked on that. Maybe they just had no interest in it, but that certainly could be an angle to it. Although I really don't think they would want to be encouraging theft, just in general.
Yeah, and in season three, we do actually see one of the disclaimers that they give at the start of the very first episode is violence or theft will result in you automatically coming last. So I have to think that was in large part a response to what we see in this episode.
Yeah, I remember early in season one, they say theft is not allowed, theoretically, but then at the end of the first episode, you have Sangmin blatantly stealing Jin-ho's garnet, but I think we talked that through as, like, they don't consider Jin-ho being an idiot and leaving his garnet behind as theft when it's just finders keepers, essentially. But in season three, yeah, there is a direct rule that theft is no longer tolerated of any sort.
Yeah, although it's not like it's theft of materials outside the game. Like, this is a problem that is created by their insistence on using an ID. So, I don't think they can really blame the players for that. They're just exploiting a loophole in the game that was created for them.
I would strongly suspect that if they had this game to do over again, they would just get rid of the ID element.
Sure. So, yeah, I think that's mainly them covering up for their own mistakes in production in earlier seasons rather than anything that the players did wrong. Although I'm curious to know where the violence provision came from, because I don't know why they felt the need to make that explicit.
I guess what could go wrong in making it clear right off the bat? Or maybe there were some people in season three they felt unsure about, like some Brandon Hance types. I don't know.
Maybe they felt that Junghyun was one step away from just going completely unhinged and, like, murdering the entire cast or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right. So just to quickly go through the rest of the way the game is played before we get into how this actual episode goes down. So you're trading around your cards, and there are also bombs involved. And if someone acquires a monopoly, whoever has the most bombs is the loser. Or bombs can also be monopolized, in which case the person who has the most distinct resources in their hand will lose. Bombs can also, just for the record, be disarmed for the price of 10 garnets. That, of course, never came into play because only a couple of people could even afford it, and that's a pretty steep price.
So that's what the game is going to be, but the game ends up being almost like a sideshow in this episode, and we don't see the game itself start until a good 20 minutes in, because the first third of it is devoted almost entirely to this search for the Token of Immortality. So Sangmin and Yuan go off to look for it together. Yuan is dubious about the idea of trusting Sangmin here. He's not convinced that Sangmin is actually going to give him what he needs, but Yuan knows the location and Sangmin knows the code, so it's just a question of the two of them finding some way to reconcile with that.
Yeah, can I give some major props here to Yuan for... He's, of course, won zero main matches to this point and thus got no hints to the actual location of the safe, but he also recognizes, hey, that doesn't mean I'm ineligible for finding the Token of Immortality, so he gets a lot of these clues, and he knows where the safe is when Sangmin doesn't. And of course, Sangmin brutally double-crosses him and so forth, but I still think that was incredible hustle on Yuan's part. Furthermore, Dom, hot take coming in. I feel like Yuan, the more I think about it, between talking earlier about how he's always, just generally aware of it's not about necessarily even winning the main match, but about, or, you know, later on when he's propelling Sangmin to winning the main matches, I guess that's the better example, where he realizes that Sangmin winning is almost better than him trying to take a shot to win himself. He's thinking about it in the bigger picture, whereas we compare that to Jinho, who we've talked about all the time as probably the most overrated at this point. Not to say he's outright bad or anything by any means. I think he's a good genius player. I just don't think he's on the same level as a couple of other people. But here's the take, Dom. I could easily see it being the case. I think Yuan might have more just general equity in a season of the genius than Jinho.
I don't think that's such a hot take, actually.
Okay. I don't think it's even that hot either, but I'm sure there are plenty of people listening right now that think that that's scorching.
Or rather, it was my hot take originally, and now you're just stealing my material.
Did you already say that?
Words to that effect, yeah, but regardless, I think we're broadly on the same page that Yuan, even if he's not outright better than Jinho, deserves to be in that conversation, and I think this idea that gets brought up of Jinho being like the all-time best genius player and Yuan being incompetent and there being this great contrast between that and their StarCraft careers, I don't think that's accurate. I think Yuan, I'm not going to say should have won the season because that doesn't make any sense, but Yuan going into the finals stood a very good chance of winning the season, and despite Sangmin's total and utter domination of the season and Yuan's just pathetic performance in main matches by comparison, you know, going into like the final five, the final four, and the actual finals, I think Yuan was the favorite at most points there.
Yeah, I guess the moral of this story, you need to really work on your build-ups and sensationalism when you're giving these takes. Yeah. Okay. So let's get into this because, as mentioned, Sangmin and Yuan now. Yuan leads him to the safe. Sangmin's saying, "Hey, just take me to the safe. We're gonna get this combination. We're gonna get it." And first of all, phenomenal call here on Sangmin's part to wear what is essentially a trench coat, knowing that he'd need to discreetly move an atlas from room to room. And furthermore, I don't know how this hasn't come up yet, Sangmin's just general wardrobe, right? Like, the first couple of episodes in season one, he wore suits, but after that point, it was basically zero fucks given, and he's just worn, like, pajamas or a bathrobe every week since.
Yeah, and what I love about it is when he is like changing his wardrobe, they all look kind of broadly similar. So it's like a suit and then a trench coat and then a bathrobe, but they all look, from a distance, they all look vaguely the same. It's only on closer inspection that you realize that he's switching it up and just gradually degenerating into this kind of general casual wear every week.
Yeah, he looks like he wore like a paintballing shirt to the finals.
Yeah, and combine that with like the bleached blonde hair as well. He really kind of goes off the deep end midway through season two.
He really loses it. Like, he just can't even believe how easy it is halfway through the season.
It's great that like episode 7 or whatever, he has just like his normal attire, and then episode 8 he turns up in this strange outfit with this ghastly coloured hair, and then the next like, and then two episodes later, it's just completely back to normal, as if it was some failed experiment that he's never going to speak of again.
It was good stuff, yeah. But I can't believe it took that long to bring that up, because it's always so funny to me that he wore just like the weirdest stuff to filming, and no one ever even really seemed to care. I mean, I guess why not be super comfortable and have, like, deep pockets and so forth? Like, especially when you're carrying around tokens and fake tokens.
Yeah, and there's potential there for, like, Survivor-style continuity errors where, like, you have a confessional from Sangmin in episode 4 where his hair is a color that it won't be for another month or so, right? But thankfully they managed to avoid that because they're a little bit more professional than Survivor tends to be about it.
I don't think they could ever even get away with that because they don't zoom in close enough because they're always wearing such different clothes for the most part from week to week.
Yeah, that's true. So Sangmin and Yeowan are looking for this token of immortality, and Yeowan guides Sangmin to the location of the safe, and Sangmin basically says, I do have the code, I just don't know what it is yet, because it's buried somewhere in this book of maps. And Yeowan, like, obviously is upset about it, but there's this kind of knowing look on his face as if he suspected this was going to happen all along.
Yeah,
like, he can't really be surprised by this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, again, I hate to keep comparing Sangmin to Dr. Will, but it's like the same thing where you want almost expected. Like, he wasn't surprised at all that he got screwed over. Whereas if it's, you know, say it's Doohy who does that to him or someone, I could see him being pretty upset, but he seemed like to actually take it really well.
Although he does say, like, oh, I'm so mad about this, I'm furious. And the idea of Yeowan being mad about something or at someone just seems so, like, bizarre given what we know of him. It's like, it's almost like it's an impossibility. But this is driving him close to the edge, it seems. But in any case, yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it seems like the angriest gesture Yeowan has ever demonstrated in his life is, like, just, like, leaving the room.
Yeah, that's his way of confronting people.
Yeah,
sure. So Sangmin now is desperately trying to get some time alone in the room with the safe so he can get to work on cracking it. But everyone else, not intentionally, but I think they are somewhat suspicious of what he's doing there. They constantly keep coming in the room for conversations or keep trying to find him, and there's just no chance that he can ever get some time to himself. And Junghyun, of course, has a perfect line where Sangmin says, I'm just doing an interview, and he says, it's not an interview of immortality, is it? he's such an underrated comic presence, but naturally, Junghyun ends up being the only one who doesn't know where the safe is eventually, so he's just kind of wandering throughout the hall, wondering why everyone is so frantic. So Sangmin gets to work on it, doesn't seem like he's able to find it, and then we don't get to see any more of his immediate search, and so we're led to think that, okay, he wasn't able to find it, he'll have to come back and redouble his effort later. The next time we see the safe is when Jinho ends up cracking it, and he opens the safe. We think that Jinho is going to be the one to find it, and it's gone.
Yeah. That's like the first big reveal. There are many, many big reveals this episode. So this is big reveal number one. Just a couple of things on that. And one thing I actually meant to bring up is, just very quickly, I kind of like that when Sangmin only got this combination, this clue to the combination, because he had only won that that last week's episode, he didn't get, unlike, you know, like in Survivor, when you get one of the newer clues, you also, with it comes all of the older clues as well, but that's not the case here. I like that he just has this one kind of out-of-context clue about the combination to the safe, but he doesn't even know where the safe is. But yeah, just moving along here. First of all, when Sangmin actually ended up finding it, it was because Jeowan, I believe they were able to lock the door. And I just quickly, I don't like that you can lock doors in the Genius. I wanted to bring up just old man yells at Cloud style. I don't like that you can lock doors in the Genius.
There's always like one aspect of these shows that you fasten on and complain about for reasons completely beyond my understanding. And it's good to know what this season's is going to be.
I don't like it. I feel like that's a Boston Rob thing to do. That's not what this is about.
Oh, well, Boston Rob is the greatest reality TV show contestant of all time, I am reliably assured. So, you know, why wouldn't you want to emulate him in every single possible way?
Good counterpoint. Okay, so let's just get into this. Sangmin has this token of immortality. What are you thinking, I suppose, if you are Sangmin here? What are your thoughts on just using the use of the token of immortality in general?
It's very much like the Terry Dietz or Tyler Perry idol, whichever you want to call it, where there's no real harm to people knowing that you have it, and when you do have it, you can essentially hang it over people's heads and say, look, if you ever try to call my bluff and put me in, either you're going in instead or someone that you would rather keep around is going in instead, so there's no point in you even trying. And you can, and that threat is going to exist and be relevant for as long as you have it until it expires.
Right, especially with the caveat that you get to select who goes in there in your place if you are the token of immortality holder and you find yourself in a death match, where it takes a lot. It takes, like, probably Kim Gura is the only one who would ever even think of doing it, to pull the trigger on actually picking the person that you know has the token of immortality when you know that they're just going to put someone you don't want to be there against to play against you. It's really, really insanely powerful.
Yeah, and I guess the counterpoint would be, if it were like the Terry Dietz idol, insofar as you have to lock in your decision with it before the deathmatch candidate is named, then that would make it more likely that you'd want to keep it secret, because that increases the range of things that you could do with it. Like, you could pass it to someone preemptively or whatever. But this way, you can just use it whenever you want, and we see Sangmin eventually give it to Yeowan after the outcome is decided. So basically, there's no harm in people knowing that you have it.
Yeah. A whole lot of upside in being the person who has the token of immortality, long story short. So I guess let's get into how this game goes down. And essentially the way this game goes down is that Doohee's ID gets stolen very early on, which means he can't trade any of his resources, which is especially bad news when the bomb monopoly is being constructed, which was easy to do since the broadcasters started with 4 out of the 5 bombs. And it wouldn't necessarily be that big of a deal if the cards were just randomly distributed. Like, maybe he could get lucky and wind up with only a few resources. But it is worth noting that they deliberately set up these cards such that they were all super varied. I think everyone got 7 out of the 8 resources in their hand to start.
And one thing that goes underreported in this episode is that Yeowan, even after getting double-crossed over the Token of Immortality, rebounds quite well and actually makes a pretty good go of it in the main game here. Like, he's the only one outside this large alliance to really focus on trying to get his own monopoly together. And then when it looks like things are going south for him and his alliance, he's able to come up with this plan, which doesn't necessarily have a good chance of working, but, you know, it's better than anything that Jinho was trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Yuan had kind of the upper hand there because he did have the bargaining chip of the 5th bomb that the broadcasters were trying to get.
That's true, although, given that he does have the bomb, that large alliance can exert a lot of pressure on him and essentially say, well, if you don't trade this bomb with us, then you can't win yourself because you can't gain a monopoly. The person who does gain a monopoly is likely to be within our group because we have the combined resources of 5 or 6 people. And when that happens, you're going to be the person who goes to the deathmatch because you refuse to help us win collectively. So, you know, he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place there. But I think he's able to navigate that situation pretty well.
Yeah, maybe some people would put that much pressure on him, and it is probably a good idea to at least try that angle. But at the same time, I could see Yuan, first of all, thinking, are they really going to all actually pull the trigger and pick me to play against in the deathmatch? Like, not to be cocky or whatever, but, like, it seems like they have some better options. Although, you know, I guess maybe not so much when Jinho is one of the other people they could pick and Doohee is one of the other people they could pick. But simultaneously, he could theoretically at least trade the bomb and get his own monopoly. Or he could say, why would you ever do, like, why would we make this hard on ourselves when we can just come to a consensus deal, I'll trade you this bomb and we can all be happy.
Yeah, although coming off of his deathmatch win against Yunsen, where she was already a feared opponent, and Yeowan hadn't been respected before that point, but I think that win really did elevate him in people's eyes. He is now a much more high-profile target than he would have been before.
And is he really, though? Because I feel like that's kind of what people would probably have expected to see out of him.
Well, not really, because in these main matches, he really hasn't distinguished himself at all. And before that point, he hadn't been to a deathmatch, so there was no test of his abilities there. And so the only thing that people got to see was him, like, bumbling along to failure every single time in these main matches.
Okay, I guess I just think, I guess I'm just putting more weight on just, like, his reputation in general as, like, the greatest StarCraft player of all time. I think that does carry some weight in Korea. But moving on, let's talk about this flash forward. We always like the flash forwards on the Genius, and this one in particular is really funny and really, really just strong on a rewatch as well, of Doohee lying on the ground in agony in the center of the main hall. Obviously, we find out quickly that it's because he's lost his ID because it got stolen, and that is, of course, the big controversy, not only of this episode, but just, like, of the Genius franchise, as I mentioned. So where do we want to get into all of how this goes down? Because this is obviously going to be one of the bigger talking points that we ever really even get to with the Genius, just given the wider implications.
I think the place to start here is, how do you feel about this whole controversy with Doohee and the ID? Because typically, we don't get up in arms about, oh, this gameplay move, whatever it happens to be, is immoral or anything like that. And I wouldn't say that Yu Yong and G1 are doing anything actively wrong here, but you know, do you think this is a blemish on the franchise, or is it, you know, what's your take on the whole thing?
This is, to kind of go back to what I said a little while ago, this is why I don't like it that they can lock doors. I don't feel like it's within the spirit of the game that you can just literally lock people out like this. So in my mind, it is certainly cheap. That being said, it's apparently not blatantly against the rules. And if Doohy left it lying around, even for as quick, I mean, it didn't even look like he left it there unattended for more than like 10 seconds. But 10 seconds is enough, and they were on top of it. And if it's apparently allowed. So I really, at the end of the day, can't fault them in any kind of real sense for actually taking advantage of it.
Yeah, this situation is not one that should come up, because the ID just shouldn't be a part of this particular game. However, given that it is, I can't fault you. I can't fault Yu Yong and G1 for exploiting that fact when it's. I wouldn't say it's forced upon them, because they could easily not make that move, and I could. And I think you could argue they shouldn't make that move, but you know, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with what they did. And also, it's. I don't want to say it's karma for this to happen to Doohy, but when he's the one who, in episode 3, makes a big deal out of betraying half of the cast, and then saying, well, surely betrayal is what the genius is, right? Then I don't think he in particular can complain when it's happening to him.
Well, this is not betrayal. I think in his mind, what he did was well within the spirit of the game, and this is outside that. I would agree with that.
Also, I don't know if Yu Yong and G1 do this to anyone, regardless of whose idea it happens to be, but I think given that it is specifically Doohy, when Yu Yong is one of the people that he screwed over back in episode 3, you know, had he not done that, or had it been, you know, Jung Hyun's ID or Yeowan's ID, I don't think they would act the same way here.
That's definitely, okay, that's fine. But at least as far as, this is not betrayal in the same sense, I would say, that Doohy betrayed the other side in episode 3.
I can see that argument, but at the same time, it's not something to really get up in arms about. Like, no, it doesn't color my opinion of Yu Yong or G1 in the way that it seemed to for the hordes of Korean internet commenters.
No, I would say this is, it's not, like, it rubs me the wrong way, certainly, as far as the way I would imagine most people would want and the way the game was meant to be played. But when it's within, apparently, the rules of the game, I'm certainly not going to hold it against anyone for exploiting it.
Yeah, the comparison that comes to mind for me, and I don't know if you think this is on point, is Topaz in Big Brother Canada with her HOH audio being broadcast throughout the house. Clearly, that's her being screwed over by production. But given that, in return, we got one of the best episodes of that season and just a night full of compelling TV in general, I'm fine with them doing that. Obviously, here, it's a bit different because they didn't intend to do it, and it's a byproduct of maybe a flawed decision, but I can't really be unhappy with the final outcome either.
Yeah, I think that is a good comparison, where you feel bad for the person, Topaz or Doohy, or, there are plenty of other instances where someone kind of gets screwed, but in a sense, it's almost like for the greater good. One aspect of this that I'm curious to hear your thought on was the way I found out about this was a friend of ours who watched the show even faster than I did. Once he was done with everything, was reading about a bunch of like whatever he could get his hands on in English, really, about the show, and told me once I was done with season 2 that this was like a huge deal. That's how I found out about it, because I'm sure plenty of people listening to this podcast, when we brought it up as like this big controversy, never would have had any idea. Like, to me, this never really would have stood out as anything. I thought, like I said, that it was kind of a cheap way to take someone out of the game, but I never would have thought that it would be like a huge deal to the viewing audience. What was your response when you first found out about all this?
Yeah, the first comparison that jumps to mind to me, and this might not mean anything to a lot of people, but this most recent season of King of the Nerds, there was this big scandal over the fact that somebody actually formed an alliance, and that this was supposed to be like unfair, and it didn't give everyone else a fair chance to compete. And you know, coming off of 15 years and more of reality competition shows where alliances are completely standard by now, you know, we've become so unfazed by it that it doesn't even register as a big deal. Like, that's just a normal part of games to us, but to fans of King of the Nerds, or to many of them, this was something that they'd never seen before, and so it had this like momentous impact. And it might be a similar thing here, where if you've never seen that kind of overt backstabbing or gameplay before, then it kind of has this greater like moral element to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, it does kind of stand out as the cheapest victory, probably, or at least more cheap than anything that came before or after it that we've seen so far. You know, just given alone that it was at least within the rules of the game, I just thought that by itself meant it at least for me, couldn't be that big of a deal. Like, certainly not big enough of a deal that it's like the deal that it seemed to have become in Korea.
Yeah, there's also the aspect that we touched on in our season one coverage, where outwardly it seems that Koreans are a lot more respectful and that you don't get that kind of confrontational attitude that you often seem to get on Western shows. The flip side of that is that in Korea, my understanding is that reputation counts for an awful lot. And in particular, doing stuff like this is seen to harm your reputation. And if you do or say something that's even remotely controversial, you will get a lot of angry, you know, internet fans who see it as like their moral duty to tear you down and make sure everyone knows how terrible you are. And we see this where Korean celebrities who commit even minor infractions, no matter how sincere their apologies end up being, or no matter what they do to try and repent for that, end up just being hounded off whatever platform they previously had.
Well, let's talk about that then, because this may come as a surprise and certainly is going to be bad news. Just quick tangent for a few people. One person who I think a lot of people are going to be surprised is not back for All-Stars is Hongchul, because, you know, just given how big of a presence he was in season two here, we certainly have plenty more great stuff to talk about with Hongchul. But the reason for that is he is apparently, like, out the game. Like, he's retired from all of his TV shows, because my understanding of it, at least, is he got a DUI while moving his car like 100 feet in a parking lot. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but whatever happened, it caused him to immediately resign from all of his shows.
Yeah, and apparently it wasn't even like a Ted Kennedy-style thing. It was just, okay, my car is here, I need to move it over here. No one else is in the parking lot, so what's the big deal? And yet, you know, one person takes offense to this and it spirals completely out of control.
Dog, Ted Kennedy was like a murder thing.
Yeah, but what, you know, same principle, whatever.
Okay, let's not throw any shade to that extent. Yeah, okay. I'm so sorry about that. But yeah, it is a disappointment, because obviously Hongchul was someone I would have loved to have seen come back again. But certainly a lot of good stuff, as I said, to get to about Hongchul.
Yeah, if you need your Hongchul fix, by the way, if you think back to Sangmin's guest Ha Ha from season one, who, you know, was someone that we thought at the time that we'd like to see on The Genius at some point, the two of them actually had a variety show together, so you can check that out. I watched a bit of it. It is highly bizarre, but it might be to your taste, so give that a look if you're so inclined. But yeah, going back to the topic of the Doohee controversy, you know, the Genius's tagline is ugly victories and beautiful defeats. I think this qualifies as an ugly victory, and the question is, you know, to what extent does it count as that? And for us, it's just, you know, it's uncomfortable to watch, and it must have been kind of soul-crushing for Doohee in the moment, but it doesn't have any like wider implications or ramifications. But evidently a lot of Korean fans disagreed. Yeah, so it looks like it's going to be doomsday for Doohee now, because there's no way he can avoid being last place. However, Yeowan has an ingenious plan, which he pitches to G1, of Yeowan's going around trying to collect the wood. I think G1 has the last thing that he needs, and so if G1 can get, you know, can move those final pieces into place, Yeowan can win by monopolizing the wood, and he can give G1 the token of life. And this would have the side effect, if I'm remembering correctly, of saving Doohee and potentially Jinho, because someone in that large group would now have the most bombs. They wouldn't be able to monopolize them, and so that person would go to the deathmatch. G1, you know, wants no part of it, and yet Yeowan is kind of reassuring Jinho that, you know, something is going to come down the ether and save the two of them. However, nothing comes to pass, and so Doohee now is looking at going to the deathmatch, but Sangmin steps in to save the day, apparently.
Yeah, well, just one quick thing before we get into that, because, of course, this is going to be great getting into the whole fake immunity, or, you know, token of immortality in just a second. One very quick, maybe just like a lost in translation thing, but the subtitles always seem to be pretty precise. And when they were explaining the rules, I don't think this would necessarily work if someone tried this angle, by the way, right off the bat, but they said the first person to press the monopoly button is the winner. It did not say you must have a monopoly when you press the monopoly button. So I don't think, like, if someone went and just immediately tried to play that, they would say, oh, wow, great find, end of game or anything, because there's no episode there. But if it's, like, some desperation move, when that was, like, actually their exact wording in Korean, that would be a phenomenal ending. I don't think that would ever actually happen, but that was probably just, like, a translation issue. But it at least crossed my mind.
That would be fantastic. And it reminds me of this show that a British illusionist named Darren Brown did, where he
I actually really like that guy. I've seen him on YouTube.
So he got a bunch of people in this room to play a game, and the idea was you'd have to solve the pattern of the things that were happening. So there were a bunch of, like, squares on the floor, and there were a bunch of, you know, items dotted around the room, and every so often this point total would go up, and you'd have to work out, like, you know, why is it going up and how do we emulate that, and you had to get enough points within a certain time limit. But as it happened, all that was going on was, in a back room somewhere, these goldfish were swimming in a tank, and every time they would swim across this barrier, so completely at random, essentially, the point total would go up. And so everyone was standing there, like, desperately trying to figure out what impact the thing they had just done had had on the point. When in reality, the solution was just written on the ceiling or something above them, and if they just walked out the door, then they would have been fine. And so it would be fun to have an episode kind of like that sometime, where the whole thing is just playing a massive practical joke on the players.
Yeah, I don't know if they ever would do that, particularly in this upcoming season, but that would be, there's at least potential for that, just like something super obvious in the very beginning. Yeah, anyway, let's get into it. We got to keep moving here. Another fantastic thing to be getting into that you hit on a second ago. Sangmin's going to bail Doohee out here. All hope is not lost here for Doohee, where Sangmin's going to give him the token of immortality. And the instruction here, the caveat, I guess, is that with this, he needs to set it up such that the death match is going to be between Jinho and Yuan, who, incidentally, now that I've been thinking about it, I'm going to switch over to Yuan, because everybody else, Yuan and Jiwan, are the only ones that I don't say with the emphasis on the first syllable. So I'm going to cave in. I'm going to say, Dom, mea culpa. My apologies, buddy.
Yeah, if you just listen to how they actually say it on the show, I find that's a pretty precise guide to how you should say it.
Well, you should probably maybe take that into consideration on Survivor.
Regardless.
Okay. But anyway, so Sangmin says, hey, I'm going to give this to you. Your job now is to set it up so Jinho and Yuan are going to be in the death match, who, of course, are Doohee's, you know, tightest allies at this point. And it's fantastic because they even take, like, a commemorative photo of the handoff of the idol, which certainly would be another of in my rotation of Twitter backgrounds. I love that picture so, so, so much.
Yeah, that was going to be my cover photo of both of them making the V for Victory sign to the camera.
And then, so I guess the game after that has to finish up so Sangmin can officially win, where the broadcasters now have all of the bombs and they give it to him, so he has won.
Yeah, and an underrated aspect of this by Sangmin is that by making this promise to Doohee to give him the token, and by telling his alliance that he's going for this massive gambit, he gets them to promise in return to make him the sole winner, so that if Doohee does see through it, he can't throw it right back on Sangmin.
Yeah, it probably actually is very crucial for Sangmin that he has basically an assured victory when he's going to make this move and give Doohee the fake idol, because if he has some reservations that Doohee might not actually go through with his plan to put Jinho and Yuan into the death match, one might imagine that Doohee would then actually pick Sangmin to put into the death match before playing the token on himself and then putting someone Sangmin doesn't want to be there, at least trying to put someone Sangmin doesn't want to be there and against. And Sangmin would then have to actually use his own token to get out of the death match for putting this kind of play on Doohee. So big reveal number three now, Dom. Doohee has lost the main match, and he has the token. And instead of picking Jinho, he picks Yu Young, and he's turned the tables on Sangmin, and he plays the token of immortality on himself.
Yeah, and with the fake out as well, he moved to shake Jinho's hand, and then said, "Oh, by the way, I'm picking Yu Young. Sorry."
Also, dude, what a troll! I bet Doohee is such a troll on all the, like, hacker.
He's great. Message boards, yeah.
On the sub internet that we don't even know about.
And which he probably created, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But big reveal number four, Dom. It was a fake token of immortality. What an amazing call by production, right? To open the door for this kind of play to happen.
Yeah, I love it. And you can tell they must have been happy when Sangmin found him, because he is exactly the type of person who would find some creative way to make this really interesting.
Yeah, they definitely got lucky with Sangmin being the one. Certainly, I mean, out of anyone really who's ever played the genius, Sangmin would probably be the one they want. He's like the Tony Vlachos finding the Tyler Perry idol.
What do you make of them giving him a realistic fake as opposed to giving him some way of trying to come up with one himself? Because, you know, Sangmin is not going to get some kind of like Jason Siska stick as his fake token. But do you think it's fine that they just hand him a replica, or would you like to see him have to put some more effort into that?
I think it's fine. Like, when the end goal is to get a replica to use, like, not only do you get the token of immortality, and maybe this is, like, a really overpowered thing, which maybe a conversation we'll have later, like, the token of immortality in general, coming additionally with this fake one, this very, very convincing fake one that I think Doohy probably had no real doubts that he had an actual token of immortality, just based on how real it looked. Where, no, I think this is a fine call. When production's goal is to get someone faked out by it, I think, why not just give it, why make them work for it and potentially get their own spot blown up when and put at risk such a great moment when someone otherwise would have such an easy time believing that it was a real token of immortality? Yeah, so I was totally fine with it. And maybe that was me being partially results-oriented because it played out so beautifully. But I don't know. I thought this was a great call by production. Like, given that it's not favoring any player in particular, it's just favoring whoever finds this, I have no issue with it at all. It's not like they only put it in there because it was Sangmin. Yeah. And incidentally, as I was watching all of these seasons, I was commenting to that guy who was ahead of us in real time. And at this point, I said to him, I don't even care if Jin-Ho goes on to win this season again. I will still consider Sangmin a better player. I think this is really Sangmin's coming out party, and certainly for the remainder of this season, it is just Sangmin sanity, trademark Colin Stone. Yeah.
Let's go into the actual reveal here, because my favorite part of this whole episode is when the voiceover reveals that it's fake. Everyone just goes completely berserk. Like Hongshul is like playfully just hitting Doohy to punish him. Sangmin is just laughing his ass off. Yu-Yong is just standing there looking utterly bewildered at what's going on. And meanwhile, everyone is going insane. Jung-hyun is just sitting in a corner in a chair by himself, just like just waiting for all the drama to subside so he can get on with things. It's absolutely fantastic.
This is another example, I would say, where Sangmin, this is made so much better because Sangmin does not tip what is coming the entire time that Doohy's doing his thing.
Yeah, absolutely. He is a consummate showman, and we see in God's Judgment as well. He knows that he has the thing on lockdown the whole time, unless someone else has also come up with the singular die, and yet he lets everything play out just as he would, you know, if he was actually having to take part in it.
Yeah, he's the one person who can justifiably not care about Jung-hyun's turn.
Yeah.
him and the entire viewing audience. So, okay. So I guess let's get into it. Doohy is, of course, now going to be playing against Yu-Young. They're going to be playing a one-on-one version of the Blackout game, which is essentially as bad as the original version of the Blackout game. Yu-Young gets more cooperation from the people when G1, once again, just destroys Doohy's life, essentially, and takes him out of the game almost single-handedly over the course of this episode.
Yeah, really kicking him while he's down here. Although, Doohy says in his final words that he believed G1 because they had some conversation over the phone where G1 said, if one of us ever goes to a deathmatch, then the other one should help them out. It would be hard for me to believe that after he does what he does in this episode. So I wouldn't take it for granted that that promise still holds true.
Yeah, and I also probably would be taking it more for granted that G1 would be drunk during that conversation.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So actually, I thought just one clever idea that Doohy had is he thought that Jin-Ho and Yeowon were kind of on his side, but rather than drafting both of them for his team for the deathmatch, he actually didn't draft either of them. You know, he kept leaving them on the table to force Yu-Young to put at least one person cooperating with him on her team.
Yeah, I think
which
that was
didn't
smart.
End up. It didn't matter. Yeah, sorry.
Although I don't know why you would choose G1 in that instance.
Yeah, that's probably questionable as well, after the way things went down. during the main match. But nonetheless, that is going to be the end of Hacker Doohee. I feel like Hacker is on par with lawyer and CEO. It deserves capitalization in the Korean culture.
What are your parting thoughts on Doohee then? Because I was expecting him to be in the mix for season 4 when I first heard about it. I know that you've said that having Jinho, Yeowan, and Doohee there would feel a bit excessive because it would have this Big Brother season 6 problem. But do you think there's any merit to that, or should we have seen him anyway, maybe?
I think you have to have Jinho and Yeowan there above Doohee. And actually, it's funny. When I did my notes, when I was rewatching this part of season 2, we hadn't even heard that the All-Star season was happening yet. And I had, under this section, it wouldn't shock me to see Doohee invited back if they ever do an All-Star season. But yeah, so I wouldn't have been surprised to see him back in general. I think he probably would have been better served to come back not in a full All-Star capacity, but I don't know. I'm certainly not heartbroken that he doesn't get to come back, although I think Doohee really did bring a ton to this season, like one of the more valuable people on the season. Even if he's not like the most dynamic confessionalist, he really almost carried a couple of these early episodes.
Yeah, and that's why, to flash forward ahead a little bit, I actually rate season 2 as my favorite season, just because, you know, everybody brings so much to the cast. Even the people who go out early or, you know, who seem forgettable in the grand scheme of things, each one of them has their own individual contribution, and that's one thing that I really like about it.
No, that is a very, very fair point, because, you know, that may not necessarily be the case with other seasons. And season 2, the games were really on point, I think, for the most part, as demonstrated by us spending ungodly amounts of time talking about some of them. Yeah, but very much unhappy to see Doohee go home here. But what can you do? It's just really unfortunate all around this week for Doohee. The blackout game is such a stupid game in general, in particular for a death match. Like, there's nothing he can do in either the main match or the death match here once he sets his ID down for like 30 seconds. So that's unfortunate.
So certainly one of the best episodes within the franchise, and there is very stiff competition for that, and I would argue one of the best episodes of reality TV as a whole. Any closing thoughts on this before we move on to part 3?
Yeah, it's got to be in that pantheon, if not at the top of that pantheon for greatest reality episode ever. There's just so much amazing stuff happening this episode, just big reveal after big reveal. And it's incredible that The Genius, it doesn't even stand out that much more than a few other episodes of The Genius, some of which we haven't even gotten to yet.
And there are certainly iconic episodes of, you know, the first few seasons of Survivor or Big Brother, but for a fledgling franchise to put something of this quality out in only its second season is truly impressive, and it's hard to give too much credit to the production team that's behind the show at this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. So anything else on episode 6?
I think that just about wraps it up, and so we will see you back for part 3 very shortly. Okay, hold up. This was going to be the end of part 2, but Colin, a day after we finished recording this...
A day! Fuck off a day!
He came up with an hilarious observation that he wishes to share with the world, and since it is now his birthday, I thought I would allow him to do so. So without further ado...
It's not my birthday yet, by the way, at least in America. But thank you
It is in Greenwich Mean Time, which is the baseline by which all other time zones are coordinated. So without further ado...
Okay. First of all, it has not been a day. And second of all, thank you for the early birthday gift, because it is not yet my birthday. But I did want to point out, because I can't believe I just thought of this. I think it is poetic, right? That Doohee is this, like, hacker, like this super well-known hacker who goes out on a case of what is essentially identity theft. I thought that was fun.
Okay, well, we will now give you enough time to ponder the deep wisdom of that as we move on to part 3. Take care, everyone.